You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
You're listening to Book Club Babes. Let's get into it.
Let's get her done, son.
Let's get her done. Let's just get her done.
Get her done, son. With an I.
Yeah. Get her done, bud.
Get her. Like a mosquito, but with the geeter.
Watch out for that geeter. It's gonna geeter you.
It's gonna geeter you. All right. Anyway, what up? How are you?
What up? How are you? What up? How are me? I am good. I am tired, but I am good this fine Sunday morning.
Fuck, I was awake at fucking 7:30 this morning.
Ew.
I obviously laid in bed for like
obviously,
hour, but it was great.
Ew, I don't like that for you.
No, I wanted to sleep until 10. I was like, I'm going to sleep until 10.
Yeah, that was what I was hoping for too, but no, didn't go that way.
However, last night, Marty and I just took a shit ton of edibles and then ate all the junk food that I got. And I can honestly tell you that I have never laughed at fucking Harry Potter that much in my life.
You guys just got super stoned, watched Harry Potter, and fucking laughed like it was a goddamn comedy.
I did. I don't know where Marty was. I feel like I was on a hold. Like, at one point, I had to put my head between my legs because I was, like, feeling a little nosh.
When I make my move, you're free to check the queen.
I'm trying to find. Okay, Harry Potter. Oh, it was Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince that we were watching.
Oh yeah, Snape got you.
But hear me out. Fucking Dumbledore is such a predator in that movie.
Oh yeah, he's like, not a good guy.
Like, Harry, you have to come with me on this adventure that might kill you. And Harry's like, okay. And then when he like sends him back. Yeah, and then when he like sends him back to get Snape, he's like, you have to go and get him, but you can't tell anyone anything. You can't speak to anyone. And I'm like, this is sounding a little predatory and also has cult vibes, Dumbledore. Not sure how I feel about that.
Dumbledore, you're just not a good guy.
So is he actually not a good guy?
Well, like, if you think about it, he knew that Harry was part of, like, either him or Voldemort had to die. Yeah, but they had to, like, kill all of the Horcruxes before this so that he had, like, Harry's power. Yeah.
So that Dumbledore had Harry's power?
Well, yeah, like, because he, you know how, like, his love can, like, injure Voldy?
Oh yeah, because he's got that sweet sweetheart.
He's got his sweetheart for his mama, so yeah, and his dad, I guess. But anyways, yeah.
Fucking Dumbledore.
Bye.
Never have I ever
Bye,
laughed.
Bowie.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Bowie just peeked out. No, never have I ever laughed so fucking hard at really inappropriate times too. Like Voldemort, when he was on screen, I just couldn't stop laughing.
When he did this.
Looks so dumb.
And his no stupid little face, snake face.
Face nose. I'm just like, dude, no one ever told you. You don't look good.
Bro needs a nose job.
I think he also needs some sun and like maybe
True.
eat some vegetables. I don't know.
One or two, maybe.
Oh my God. Anyway, so yeah, that was my night. Would
I love that for
recommend. It was pretty entertaining. So
I love that for you. Love that for
yeah.
you.
Sometimes you just gotta. Anyway, other than that, I'm literally not reading or doing anything fun. Although I did start listening to, which I didn't say last week, Once There Were Wolves. I'm like listening to
Oh, yes. Very
it's a
good,
good
very
book.
good.
It's a good book, yeah.
I should listen to it. But speaking of books I've finished,
Tell me.
I listened and finished up Forever Interrupted because I was it that? Yeah, I think that's what it was. It's so good. I would suggest it.
Was that a TGR?
Yes, it was
TJR? TJR?
TJR. Yeah, that was a Taylor Jenkins read. Yeah.
Oh, what was the storyline?
I hope I don't think I'm giving anything away because it literally happens the first chapter. Her husband, they're a young couple, and her husband dies running an errand for her. I
No,
know,
my biggest
I
fear,
know,
my biggest fear.
I
I
know,
don't like
I
that at
know, I
all.
know. It's
Running
awful.
an
And
errand
then,
for her?
So then it's her coming over that, and then they had only been married like 10 days, and it's super sad, obviously, but then like it's heartwarming at the end. And
I hate that.
I just
Oh
needed like
no.
a good like heart
Yeah.
stabbing, like I'm crying. There's moments
Yeah.
where I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so happy for her, or oh my God, I'm gonna cry because it's so
I love
sad.
that. Can
I
you, are
just
you
need
crying right now?
heart stabbing. Well, I'm thinking about it, and then at the end, what happens? And I'm like, oh.
You need to read Shark Heart and you'll get another
Okay.
little good cry. Please read
Okay.
it. It's
Okay.
so good. It's
Maybe I'll
so
pick it up
good.
today if I can get around to all of our chores.
Please read it. It's so good. And you'll go through it so quick. And it's just so good. All
Yes.
the babes. I want all the babes to read it too. It's such a good book.
I'm still just can't get over the way that you described the nose becoming
That
like a flopper nose.
happened. That also happens quickly. And the way that he describes it in the book, it's like kind of funny. He's not
Okay.
like being like gross or morbid about it because it is gross and morbid, but he's like,
Fair,
kind of
fair.
cool.
It's kind of cool at the same time. Well, maybe if that happened to me, I'd get like a better nose in my
Well, I'd
shark
hope,
life.
yeah, I'd hope that that meant that like this hard bump in the middle of my nose would just go away because it would just be soft.
Yeah.
But you know
Yeah.
what? That's not
Anyways,
how
well,
turning
anyways.
into a shark works. So I'd probably
True,
still
I
have the
guess
same
you are
fucking
turning.
nose.
You are turning into a shark, so.
You know what? I would probably turn into a shark, fully whole body shark, but my fucking nose stays the exact same, just really big.
Rude, rude. That would happen. Fuck. Just two girls wanting a nose job over here. That's all. Just a small one. Nothing crazy.
Maybe we can get the pod big enough so that we can celebrate with nose jobs, matching nose
True. Yes. Let's get matching noses. Come
jobs.
on. Let's do it.
Oh my God, could you imagine? Anyway, have
I've
you been
been looking,
reading?
speaking of nose jobs, sorry.
Tell me.
I've been looking at non-invasive nose jobs. I don't think it would work with my problem. Literally, I can't breathe through my one nostril.
Oh no, you want like you could probably go and get that comped because that's like an
Well,
actual health thing,
Like, I
not
can't breathe
just
through
an
it.
aesthetic. Yeah, you could
Maybe I
probably
should
go
go
and get a
talk to my
procedure.
doctor.
Yeah, maybe, you know, breathing's fun and stuff.
Well, meh, whatever. I've done it this long this way. Anyways, so
You
what
could
are
just
you
pull a
doing?
Boldy.
That's
You could just pull a Boldy and go, no
a
nose.
true. You know what? Maybe just cut it
All
off.
the breathing, all the breathing. You
Wow.
know, you could probably
Riveting.
get, I'm serious, you could probably get
I
like
probably could.
a, what do we call an
Like a
OHIP nose
referral.
job.
Yeah, true. I could probably get an OHIP nose job. I don't know if I would want an OHIP nose job though. I feel like that
You just,
you'd
I mean,
actually want to pay
you
for it.
They still send you to a professional? Like, it's not just like a hack job.
But I think that they'd just be like, okay, here's your referral to this plastic surgeon, and you don't get to actually like pick and choose. And they're just like, here you go, good luck. Who knows but what's going to happen? Be like,
while you're in there, can you just...
while you're there, just tidy it up a bit. Make it less protruding hook-like witch-like.
Yeah, just like whatever God did, just fix make it a little better.
Just a little better.
I think he had a couple drinks when it came to my nose. So yeah. I don't blame him.
Straighten it out a bit. Straighten it out a bit. Fuck. Put it back in place. Anyways. Yes.
So, you're not reading, watching, listening to anything else?
No, because I literally was obsessed with the book that I was listening to this week. I was just like, listen at
re-cleaning
any possible moment.
Recleaning your baseboards just to listen? Yes.
Exactly, you got it.
I hear you.
What about you? Anything?
Nope, same. I'm just reading The Rachel Incident and listening to Once There Were Wolves, and then I'm on that Dateline kick forever. I love listening to Dateline. Mm-hmm.
That's a good one, especially when it's a Keith Morrison episode.
Yes. It was funny. I listened to like a follow up. It was like they're doing these things where they do like follow ups about the episodes, and I guess it's like about like the TV episode, but I think they just do it for no. There's a video aspect for sure. Anyway, so the two were Andrea Canning and what's that guy's name? That other guy, not Keith Morrison. But they were talking about how they were at a true crime com, and they were like, I guess only the one guy went, and Andrea Canning and Keith Morrison did not go. And so he was talking to Andrea Canning, and he said, oh, you and that other guy were missed. And she's like, oh yeah, that other guy.
Just casually, that other guy, the fucking Canadian icon himself, Keith Morrison.
No, just that other guy. Like, who cares about him?
Exactly. When I found out he was Canadian, I was like, you know what? This is amazing. I love that for us.
I know. And he's got kids.
So good.
Did you know? Actually, funny story, real quick, before we hop into this. Marty and I went on a little road trip yesterday. So Marty's got this music on his phone, and it's all the same shit, and like, I'm over it. So sometimes he'll just ask for like random stations. So he asked for Canadian hip hop, which did not come through, but we ended up having to just listen to like Canadian artists. Did you know that the guy who sings Roxy Roller is Canadian?
I did not know that. That's interesting.
And also the guy who sings Lovers in a Dangerous Time.
That's Bare Naked Ladies.
It's not?
What? It's just by the one guy from Bare Naked Ladies?
Wait, it is Bare Naked Ladies. No, Bruce Cockburn. He sang it originally, and Bare Naked Ladies must have covered it.
Oh, a two Canadian mashup. There you go.
Yes, you're right, because it does say, wait, who the fuck is Bruce Cockburn? Is he from Bare Naked Ladies?
Oh, that I don't know.
No, I think he's just himself. I think he's just a man who's himself.
Just a man singing about lovers in a dangerous time himself.
Yep. And then one last surprise that came on that I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you probably know this. Prozac.
No,
they're Canadian.
I did not know this. I've got a strange disease.
That's the song that came on. Marty like changed it halfway through. He's like, this isn't as good as I remember.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Wee, wee. What is it? No, it's like
the woo-doo, woo-doo.
That's it, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I'll shut up now.
www.nevergetoveryou.
A true Canadian icon and legend.
Yes, Prozac. Anyways, anything else before we get in? Because I've got some babes.
Oh, tell me.
Okay, well, we've got a few here. So we've got Audrey, we've got Kim, we've got Ainsley, and we've got Mariah.
Ooh, welcome to the crew. Welcome. One of them showed us her kittens, right? Ooh,
yes, and that one little kitten Atlas. Oh, he's just a baby. He's just a baby.
Yeah, it's just a baby. That's what I said in the comment. I was hoping that you got it. And I was like, just a baby.
It's just a baby.
And the green eyes on that other cat.
Whoa, they were stunning. Stunning.
So green. I love it. Green.
Love, love, love.
Muscle. Okay. Let's fucking green. Do this.
Let's go.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Who starts? You do.
Me.
Who
I start-
do you do?
Who do?
You do
what? Remind me of the babe. The babe with the power. Okay, sorry.
What power?
No, we don't. Oh, we've done this once before, and I'm sorry, but we're just gonna keep the power of the
baby. You're not gonna be. Do what?
Do what? Remind me of the babe.
Remind me of the babe.
Oh,
FOLs.
FOL for sure.
Okay. I'm gonna shut the fuck up so that you can talk.
I'm fucking starting, and you get an epi for once. A little epi.
Oh shit. Okay, good. Yes, I do. I was like, no, take
no, no, no. Okay. Sorry. Last week we ended in a then chapter. So now we're back in the real life days. And remember, she went to go visit her parents.
Oh yeah, that was a cliffhanger.
Yeah, that was a hanger. They were hanging
so
right
much
over
happens.
The cliff.
So much
what
happens.
Happened? What even
at
happened
the end
here?
Of this book? So much to discuss.
Yes. So, okay. So obviously we're finishing up All the Dangerous Things by Stacey Willingham, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And she's at her parents' house. Isabel is at her parents' house. And the author is doing a great job of making us feel very uncomfortable because it's an uncomfortable silence. And as soon as she walks in, her dad offers her whiskey or wine. And it's not even noon yet. So we can kind of see maybe where he has gone after his quote unquote retirement.
She's like, I'll take coffee.
Coffee? It's literally like 10 a.m. Anyways, so the three of them are sit in their living room, but all in opposite corners of the room.
On different sofas different and everything.
Sofas and everything, exactly. And she's just like, thanks for the card and check. Her dad's like, oh, no problem. It's nothing. And asks how Ben is. Which it's just like super awkward silences and conversation. And Isabel says that or knows that they don't like to talk about problems. Politics and religion are always a go in their house, but feelings and emotions are a big N-O-P-E. No.
How interesting. That's a backwards one, huh?
Yes, that is backwards. Well, some houses. So. Knowing this, Ben is definitely fine and just busy at work. So nice. Story checks out. Nice. Obviously more awkward conversation. And finally, her dad asks, what can we do for you? Which would be awful and heartbreaking. And he's just being like squirmy, wormy. He's like squirming in the chair.
Well, he's her like, mom... why are you here?
Exactly.
Like, what do you want?
What do you want from us?
Yeah.
That's how, like, obviously how far they've drifted apart. It's mm-hmm. making mm-hmm. it very clear. Mm-hmm. Finally, her mom speaks up and asks how she's holding up, which then Isabel decides to be vulnerable and tell them that she's not doing great at this moment. And she remembers back to them visiting Mason for the first time and how strange it was and how her dad held him like the whole time. And the mom was like, noped out. She's like, I'm not here for this baby. And how she is thinking that Margaret should have been here, and how it should have been her baby that they were visiting and all of this.
She also I feel like one of the underlying thoughts of her too, I don't know if you're going to cover this, but like that she felt like her mom didn't want to touch her baby because she's baby. Like afraid of her.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Isabel wonders if they picture her with Mason doing the same thing she did, so she thinks, to Margaret. She tries to break the tension by mentioning that she might go to the cemetery and visit Margaret. And at this point, they're kind of like, we go and visit her every Sunday after church. And like, she can just feel like they're itching for her to leave. They want her gone. And so she feels like this is the time to ask why they've never talked about what actually happened to Margaret. Her dad takes back over the conversation and says, why would we? It was an awful accident. She says, yes, I understand it was an accident, but it might help me understand what's going on in my own life right now. I remember the wet floor, the new pajamas, and like the mud and everything. Her dad's like, stop bringing this up. It was an accident. It's nobody's fault. She tells him that she knows she was there for whatever happened. And we leave that chapter with him saying, don't do this to yourself.
The twist, the turns.
I've got whiplash.
Honestly. All right. So now Isabel is sitting on the dock at her family's place after having agreed to stay for dinner. I feel like it was like a nicety that she was like, yeah. And they were like, oh.
Oh, no. You know what I mean? Never mind.
Yeah. So the kitchen has been remodeled. It needed it after the fire, which I was like, is this the first time we're hearing about the fire? Because mm-hmm. I don't remember ever hearing mm-hmm. about a fire. Okay, cool. Because I was like, what the mm-hmm. fuck is this shit? So it needed it after the fire, but that she also knows that they've done this as an attempt to erase the past. So her parents are pretty big avoiders, which is probably where Isabel gets it from. And while she's helping her mom prepare dinner, her mom comes up behind her and says, you know, I love you. You know that, right? Which is interesting. She's like wanting to connect, but it's the weirdest. It's like she knows that that Isabel knows that she doesn't think that her mother loves her.
Yeah. Eek.
Cool. She's finding that all of her parents' attempts to remove Margaret has done nothing for her, and that she is still reminded of Margaret everywhere and the time that they spent together. She's also feeling like the visit to her parents' house has an unsaid underlying feeling or whatever. Oh, like she's trying to extend an olive branch. Like she wants to like kind of make peace with them, as if she was apologizing for what she did and that they are also apologizing for forgetting her as a child. Mm. Yikes. Sounds like they're unpacking a lot.
Yeah.
In a weird way at this
house. Yeah.
So she goes to her old bedroom, which has also been redone. She wonders about Margaret's room, but she can't bring herself to look. She's feeling weird in the house. I guess she's decided to stay the night, obviously, is what I didn't write down, but what's happening. And she's like, because she doesn't sleep. We all know that, right? So she's like, what am I going to do for the next 10 hours? She's just dreading her fucking life. So she decides to go and explore the house. She goes up to the attic where she's got many memories with Margaret into her mother's painting room. So she starts to explore and she sees a pile of her mom's old paintings and she decides to go through them when suddenly she stops because she is looking at the painting that her and Margaret had found many years ago of her in the marsh. However, this time there are three people in this painting, not just one, and that there are two in a nightgown and one in a robe, and the one in the robe is her mother. And then ooky spooky, her mother is there IRL, and she says, Isabel, honey, let me explain. What's happening? So at this point, especially with all of our babes, at this point I'm like, okay, is there, because I didn't think that the third person was necessarily their mom. Because it just said, like, robe, right? So I'm like,
yeah.
Is there secret brother? Is Waylon secret brother? Is there another weird sibling in this house that we don't know about? Like, that's what I'm thinking.
True. So, of course, her mother explains that she was very, very sick. And that everything started when they lost Ellie, which doesn't really ring a bell other than the fact that it was Margaret's doll. And then she starts remembering her mother's strange behavior and her like weird maniacal laughing. And then it clicks with her that night where she saw her mom or heard her mom screaming, her dad in the hallway, the blood all over the sheets. And then she remembers her mom with a unfortunately stillborn baby and her mom in her mother's arms while she's like singing to it, which is awful.
Also, like, fucking dad resorts to drinking right after that.
That ain't right. So then she's thinking about like in the past and all that stuff and how her mom was always there but she wasn't actually there with her, and it was like now she realizes that it's neglect. And then she tells her mom that she can understand why she would have been depressed and everything like that, and her mom finally speaks and says that it was more than depression, and that it was just this like awful, it was very just heartbreaking. And then she acquaints this to that strange feeling that has always been in the house, and she realizes that it was her mother that was that strange feeling. We find out that her mother tried to tell their dad that something was not right with her and that she was feeling and thinking things that were starting to scare her. She remembers back to that night at, we were already talked about this in the book, that she was thinking that her mother was scared of her and her sleepwalking, but really she was afraid of herself.
OMG, OMG. Mm-hmm. Isabel, her whole life, mm-hmm. thought that her mother was like afraid of her.
Mm-hmm. No. No. She's just scared of herself.
Jesus Christ. All right. So obviously she asks her mother, what did you do? Because she's starting to pick up what's being put down here. Isabel suddenly has a memory again of her reoccurring dream, and she's also remembering that Dr. Harris said that sleepwalkers can sometimes remember things from their episodes, but it comes back to them like a dream. So this is interesting because she's like, maybe this isn't a dream. So what she remembers is Margaret walking into the marsh towards her mother. She asks her mother why. She tells Isabel that she had tried one other time by leaving the gas on the stove on. She figured they would all go to sleep and just never wake up. So her mom is very troubled. Like, he did need some help, and dad was bad. He's a bad, bad daddy.
That's a bad dad.
That is a bad dad. So this is when Isabel realizes that her dad knew that her mom was feeling this way. She's remembering that conversation that she overheard. Elizabeth tells her that he kept saying it was an accident and that she didn't do it on purpose, and because essentially he didn't want to believe it. So that just kind of goes back to the whole congressman reputation thing. Like I think a part of him really did just want to believe that it was just mm-hmm. like this big accident, especially because she had said to him, like he mm-hmm. knew. So he's probably like, oh, I fucked up. Like, yeah. I should have done something about this, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now Isabel is suddenly making a connection between what her mother had struggled with and what she herself had struggled with once Mason was born. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They've got a common connection. Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Okay. Isabel decides that she should leave as soon as the sun comes up because she's not sure if she can face her parents in the daylight. This is her talking to her mom last night. She tells her mom that she always thought that she was the one who led Margaret out there and that she had done something. Her mother tells her no, and that she had no idea that she had thought that her whole life, which...
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
Isabel, yeah, yeah. Isabel... like obvious is like, how could I not? We never talked about anything. Mm-hmm. Everybody just left everything, swept it under the rug, and you deal with it on your own terms, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Her mom gives her like a folder, which I'm assuming is maybe all the details about what happened, but she yeah. can't bring herself to look at it. And so she's still left wondering like who is responsible, who is to blame. Obviously it was her mother who led them out to the marsh and held Margaret down and then moved on to her, and remembering the mud mm-hmm. behind her ears, her mother mm-hmm. feeling her heartbeat for the last time. Or is her dad to blame, realizing that he let it happen, essentially? She's at Margaret's grave. Her mother never hated her, and that she had hated herself instead. And she's wondering if she should be grateful for her dad. But she's realizing that he's done this just to save face and the Rhett name. And that
no wonder he drinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And that Chief Montgomery knew, and they made the whole story up together. And he did this all to protect himself. And that it's, yeah. He would spin it to say, oh, it was for our family, but really mm-hmm. it's him and mm-hmm. his name and mm-hmm. reputation.
So remember back to the beginning when they were sending the money, and I was like, what does this mean? Because mm-hmm. she's like,
it was to keep like her quiet, not them. That's what she was thinking.
Right, right. And I was so confused by that because I was like, what does that mean? Like, I don't get it. But now that we know, mm-hmm. that's what it means.
Yes, yes. Because I'm assuming they probably thought all along that she knew the whole story.
Yeah, they thought that she knew. And she thought that she fucking killed her sister her whole life.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Like, what would you even feel after that? Like, you would almost feel relief, but then could you feel relief knowing that your mother is the murderer? Like,
exactly.
And they didn't fucking tell you your whole goddamn life?
I know, right? And I don't know if it's in this chapter or not, but she does make a comment that she's like, I realize that I will have to unpack this at some mm-hmm, point mm-hmm, kind of thing. Mm-hmm, but it's like, mm-hmm. good for you. Good for you. Thank you. You're maybe mm-hmm. moving on from your weird past.
I cannot even I'm just like, yeah, I just kind of feel bad.
That's a bad dad. That's a bad dad.
A bad dad. Oh, it's a bad mom too. Everybody's bad over there.
True.
Okay, so she stays at the cemetery for a while, and then she gets back into her car and she's looking at the envelope. Her hand is bandaged because of the wine glass. I'm confused here. I think I didn't write it down. Did she drop a wine glass or like squeeze a wine glass or something when her mom came up behind her?
Oh, maybe. I can't 100% remember that either.
I can't remember either, but she's got a bandaged hand because of a wine glass. That is what I know. So, and I know she was drinking wine when her mother, so I'm guessing something happened there, but I didn't write down. Anyway, So she decides to scan the contents of the envelope. We find out that her mother's official diagnosis was a, quote, very rare, severe, yet treatable condition that can occur after the birth of a baby, exacerbated even further by the trauma, grief, and isolation following the death of said baby. That fucking sucks. I get it. That is pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. She has to admit that she does feel some relief at knowing what happened to Margaret and knowing that it wasn't her. But after all these years, that would just be insane. She reads on further and sees that this condition can be hereditary if a mother or sister has the condition. So she's kind of like, all right, I'm happy to know that I didn't kill Margaret, but like, this isn't looking good for me.
It's still not confirming that I haven't killed my own son.
Yeah. Like, she's gotten one answer, but like, not the answers.
Yeah.
So she still wants to know if she could have killed her son, what she should do to get to the bottom of it. She's like clueless at this point, but also she's thinking, what's up with that old man on the porch? Could he just be placed there to scare her or to get her to stop asking questions? Cause she's like, there are too many things that aren't fitting together. Like, I don't get it. She's also starting to feel uneasy about Ben and thinking about their interaction yesterday with Valerie there, which was not good. It's reminding her of when she was with Ben at Allison's memorial, and then she's like, oh yeah, Waylon's voice sounded so familiar and I could never place it. And she's like, that man who had called for Ben when they were making out in the bushes, it was Waylon. And she's realizing now that he obviously knows Ben. So she's like, did Ben send him to me to try to extract information or to keep tabs on me? Like, what is this Waylon dude and Ben doing together? So she's doing some Googling in her car. She's like, PI, ready to go. She decides to Google Waylon's name and Ben's name together. And that's when she finds out that fucking Ashley was right and Waylon is Allison's sister. Mm-hmm. Twist number two.
Twisty two.
Because twist number one would be not having killed their sister. Twist number two, Waylon is Allison's brother.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So she confirms this by reading Allison's obituary. And there it is in writing that Waylon is her younger brother. And she never even knew Allison's like maiden name, which is fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. And then she says, I guess that I'm like my parents that way, which at least she's self-aware.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Exactly. Her and Ben just pretty much ignored her existence as soon as she died. Mm. So she decides to call Waylon. She's wondering if maybe he thought that she killed Mason. So the first thing she asks him is, when she gets a hold of him, is, do you think that I killed my son? And his response is, no, why would you think that? Excuse me?
Did he not literally say that to her?
Well, no, because she was thinking, like, she didn't say it out loud. She was like, he answered the question that I was thinking.
Right, before.
Which was,
he was like, somebody in this house killed, like, took your baby.
Yes.
So then she just was assuming that he was saying it was her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's like, what? No.
He's like, no, that's not what I was getting at. She then drops the bombshell and tells him that she knows that he is Allison's brother and that she's not mad and just wants to know why he's here and what he knows about Ben. His response is, it's not what I think I know, it's what I know. I know he killed her, Allison.
Yikes. Yikes. I love it. Uh-huh. So there's another twist. So what's that? Like, just twist three and four together?
Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
One was that she didn't kill. One was that she didn't kill him. Two is that Waylon is Allison's brother. Mm-hmm. Three.
Waylon knows that he killed Ben, or Ben killed Allison.
Killed Allison. And four is that Waylon doesn't think that.
That, yes.
Isabel killed
her own son. Yes, exactly.
Oi. Okay. It's happening.
We'll keep
it's
it together
very quickly.
Timeline. We need a murder map.
Yeah, we need a murder map. Okay, so when Mason was 6 months old, Isabel tells Ben that she wants to start working again. So when Mason was 6 years old, Isabel tells Ben that she wants to start working again. Then we're going back to how Ben took the news of her being pregnant. And so she says that he took the news well, but that he never changed his work habits like she thought he would. She wanted her identity to not just be wrapped up in the baby. So essentially she's like, we have this baby. I want to work now. He never changed. Like, I'm going to do it. It's both of our responsibility, essentially. And so what she's done is that she's pitched this idea to a magazine about what she wants to write, and they agreed to it, and they want to pay her $3,000 to get this story done. Which she says is like the most that she's ever been offered to write a story, but that she'll need to be away for a few days. Ben is like capital P-I-S-S-E-D about this, not happy at all, saying they don't need the money, and he's trying to convince her not to do it. But she's like, I want to do something for myself. Like, I want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So to punish her, he tells her to do whatever makes her happy, and then he takes Mason out of her hands and walks away.
No,
he's
I don't like that.
Manipulative.
Yep.
The manipulator. Yep.
Okay. She's meeting Waylon at a spot that Ben would never go to. It's like, you pour your own cream and sugar, and it's like, how could you?
Jesus.
Once she meets him, he apologizes for willfully omitting the truth. And she fills him in, or he fills her in on what he knows. So we find out that Allison and Ben met in high school, and that he is a few years older than her, and like pointed at her in the hall and was like, you're mine, which I'm like, oh, but Izzy can relate to.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah. He proposed to Allison once she turned 20, and then they were married by the time she was 21. Their parents loved Ben's like immensely, but him, Waylon, not so much. He feels like he's always seen through his act. We find out that Allison had wanted to be a lawyer, but he didn't want that for her. Ben didn't want that for Allison.
That ain't right.
No. He then, as he gets older, realizes that whatever a healthy relationship is, it's not theirs. And that Allison just kept shrinking away. Anytime she wanted to do anything, she just became whatever Ben wanted her to be.
So that's why she gets to be a no kid housewife. Even though it sounds good, might not be as good as
we wish. Obviously, this makes Isabel think about when she started working again and how it was defiance against Ben. And this is when Waylon tells her that one time he saw Ben at a bar, and he was assuming that he was waiting for Allison, but then
I forgot about this.
It was you. And then he watched them for the rest of the night, and Ben treated her, Isabel, just like Allison. And she even looked the same as Allison.
Of course, he
seems like he's done talking. So Isabel prompts what happened next. And then we find out that Allison had gotten pregnant. And then a couple of weeks later, she died. That's another twist. She was pregnant.
Excuse me?
She was preggers.
Excuse? All right, so
the hits just keep coming.
And they keep coming. Isabel is now thinking back to when the pregnancy test revealed those two little lines saying positive. Positivio.
Sucks to suck, as you would say.
Yeah. She's remembering how she felt so desperate to keep Ben and her desire to create something beautiful with him. But when she was holding the positive pregnancy test, the reality that she's now tied to Ben forever sunk in. And she's wondering if this is how Allison felt too, trapped. And then I have a little note because we have our new strategy where I read it all and then go back and take notes. And because I wasn't taking notes in your chapters, I was like, oh, flip, I forgot Allison was pregnant because I didn't read that one. Yep. It does make sense now because you just said that. But I was like, oh, my God. So Waylon tells Isabel that Allison would never have overdosed having known she was pregnant. Waylon then confirms that she knew she was pregnant because she had told her family already because she couldn't keep any secrets from them. She remembers having met Allison at that Christmas party and how Allison had carried around a champagne flute, but that when she whispered in her ear, her breath had smelled like mouthwash. So she's like, oh, she wasn't drinking and I didn't realize. She's thinking that Allison's death had made it so that Ben didn't need to make a choice. But then she's like, but when did Ben ever let life just happen to him? Like, when was he not in control? So she's realizing that maybe Ben did make his choice and she just didn't know. Then we find out, this is super fucked, then we find out that Waylon saw Isabel and Ben together at Allison's memorial. And that's when he knew that Ben had killed his sister. So yeah, he came down and like interrupted them because he had literally seen them from the room up above.
He was watching them.
Oh, he had his peepers on. Sheesh. Yep. So how infuriating would that be?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Her own fucking house too, at her family's house, her childhood home. And this fucking dork is in the back canoodling. Mm-hmm. Oh man. Not done with that. So Waylon tells Isabel that he's there because he obviously wants Ben to pay. There wasn't enough evidence with Allison having died, but that when he heard that Mason had gone missing, he knew that Ben had done it again. So he's like, we can probably get him on this one. So obviously we find out he wasn't looking into Isabel at all. It was Ben the entire time. Then Isabel asks, why does he think that Ben would hurt his own son? And Waylon's reasoning is that it would look pretty suspicious if he had two wives die by suicide. And does she really think he wanted to be a single dad? And she's like, you raised some valid points, Waylon. I think you're right there. Those are good.
It's all coming together. The pieces fit. They're coming together.
Yeah, she's like, you're not wrong there. Weird. So she starts putting it together how Ben would have been inside the house, like Waylon had said, how he would have known that the batteries were out, how he could have left and came back without waking Roscoe, like all of these things. She's like, oh shit, I was blind.
So obviously this prompts her to go creep on Ben and Valerie.
Oh, girl.
She can see them like inside the house and everything, and she knows that Ben is going to be getting ready to go to work.
Okay, I'm sorry, but like Isabel loves a questionable decision.
She does love that. She does love making questionable choices. This is true.
Oh my God.
We do know this about her.
Yes.
As Ben is leaving, she realizes or notices how easy it was for Valerie to slip into Ben's life and take Isabel's place. So then Ben is on the move, but she doesn't follow after him. Shortly after, Valerie leaves and she decides that's who she's going to be following. She follows Valerie to her house. And then she's like remembering back to when she was her age, because it's like a small little like cottage house, and she's like, oh, I remember like when Ben came to my house and
bachelorette pad,
exactly, and looked at my IKEA furniture and like how I had to thrift furniture and all this stuff, and how he would like be disgusted on being there. Anyways, so she's wondering if she feels the same way. She knocks on the door. Knock, knock, knock. Who's there? It's me.
Don't follow people to their houses.
Isabel. She asks
Oh man, this
Valerie if they can talk, of course, Valerie's like, how do you know where I live? She just glosses over mm-hmm. that. She doesn't say anything. She just says that there's things that you should know about Ben. She says that it's important that they talk because she is worried about her. Valerie's like, you're worried about me? You should be worried about yourself. Like, you right. are crazy. Like, you're showing yeah. up at my house. You obviously followed me here. This yeah. is not good.
Yeah. And let's not forget that Valerie is a therapist. So yes. she's like very much like bing, bing, bing.
mm-hmm. Exactly. Isabel retorts back and asks, is that what he told you? This obviously hits a nerve, and she can see that Valerie wants to ask some questions. And then also remembers back when she took Valerie by surprise at the church and how she wanted her to stay and obviously know Isabel's side of the story. So then she lets her in.
Eep. Oh, man. All right.
This chat.
It snuck up on me. Ready for twist number fucking 17? Okay, so she walks into the living room and she sits down. The apartment is cute, but very, like, my vibe was, like, young adultish. Like, it wasn't, mm-hmm. like, grown-up house, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. There is a glass coffee table that she observes, and there is also, like, a clothespin photo hanging thing on, like, mm-hmm. one wall. It's too far away for her to see them, like, see all the photos, but she does observe that as well. So she tells Valerie that she wants her to know what she's getting into with Ben, and also if she knew that he was married before. She's like, yes, I did know this. And then Isabel's like, then you know that she died around the same time that they had gotten together, like Isabel and Ben, and that Ben had never wanted kids. And Valerie then tells Isabel that she needs professional help and that Ben had warned her about this, that she won't tell him that she came by her house, though, because he would be heartbroken over the way she's talking about him. So Ben has also, like, sort of manipulated Valerie, too, in a
infiltrated.
Way. Which
he's
makes
infiltrated.
Sense, though. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, like, Isabel isn't helping herself at all mm-hmm. for this situation. So no. It's a lot. So Isabel is ready to apologize and leave because she's, like, kind of embarrassed at this point. But she takes a final look around the room, and that's when she gets a second look at that clothespin picture thing, because all of those photos hanging there are photos of Valerie and Ben. Mm-mm. And she's noticing Valerie's fucking hair dye is progressively getting, she can see that it's growing and that Ben's beard is growing and changing. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this looks like a considerable amount of time has passed in between the hair and the beard vibe. Mm-hmm. So this is when she knows that they were together long before her and Ben were apart.
mm-hmm.
Once a cheetah, always a cheetah.
Mm-hmm.
She confronts Valerie about this. She tells her that she felt bad for so long, but when she heard this is what Valerie's saying to her. She felt bad for so long, but when she heard about the things that Isabel did, and now this feeling that she's having, hearing Valerie say this to her, is sounding very familiar. And that she was the one in the literal, like, exact same place as Valerie, because this is what Ben did to Isabel about Allison, right? Like, told her mm-hmm. how inept she mm-hmm. was and how, you know, crazy mm-hmm. she was. And
same
all
MO.
So then we find out that Valerie and Ben have been together for 2 years.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
And she does a little, she does some calculation in her brain, and she realizes that Mason would have been 6 months old when they started dating. She tells Isabel that she was always leaving when she was going for her work, and that Ben was lonely. How she had been to their house, how Mason was getting to the age where he was starting to talk. And this is when it hits as Isabel, and she asks Valerie, what did you do? What did you do to my son? She's picturing Valerie having had to walk from their house in the middle of the night because Ben would have insisted that she park away from the house. And we know this because Isabel was literally Valerie at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, thinking about Valerie introducing herself to the old man in the rocking chair as Elizabeth Drake. I mean, Isabel Drake. Shit, that one hit me.
That's fucked. It's fucked. That's another, there we go. Chalk it up. Another one down.
Because okay. I was like, how are they gonna, you know, explain the old man? Like, what's his fucking point in all of this?
Exactly. So obviously Val's like, huh? Who, me? Couldn't be. Isabel straight up is like, you took my son, and then she imagines how it would have played out. Valerie using the key that Ben gave her, aka the missing one.
Fuck.
Exactly. She lets herself right in the house and no one would have been alarmed, aka Roscoe, that she was, because she has been coming over for a full year at this point.
Oh my God. And like stepping in for Isabel when she's not there.
Exactly.
I don't like that.
Of course, then Valerie finally speaks how she thinks she should be feeling in this situation because of what Ben has been telling her. She says that some people just aren't fit to be mothers. You both didn't want to be parents, and so many people would love to have a child. Some people would kill for it. She just says that it's for the best and that it's for the best for everybody in this scenario. And that Ben had told her what she did to her sister, Margaret, and that it was only a matter of time before she did the same thing to Mason.
Isabel's like, bitch, I just found out some information.
Exactly. And then she leaves off those little comments by saying, it's okay, he's in a better place.
Say what?
Exactly. Then all of a sudden, Isabel feels their bodies collide, tangled in a mess, falling into the glass coffee table, and the sickening sound of a skull cracking.
What do you think that would sound like? Like a squishy crack?
Like just one that you, yeah. I can't imagine that sound. Crab.
But squishy too. Like.
Blop. Blop. That's a little bit of brain falling out. Blop.
Yikes. Yikes, yikes, yikes. Okay. So, 2 days later. Detective. What, how do we say his last name again? Dozier?
Dozier, whatever.
Dozier, detective, whatever. It's at the door.
Detective Daddy.
Detective Daddy is at the door. And he asks her about what happened to her hand. And she tells him it was a wine glass, which this is true. So that's weird. Anyway, he came to tell her that there has been a development in Mason's case. He says that he's sure she's seen the news and that Valerie Sherman has been murdered. And in a roundabout way, he kind of accuses Isabel of Valerie's murder, but like doesn't come outright and like ask it or say it, which is,
he's pretty nonchalant. Yeah, he's like
nonchalant. Yeah, he's like, just so you know, your husband's mistress was murdered. Do you have anything to say about that? Or no comment? Okay. Sounds
no comment.
Good. Just accept that at face value. So apparently after her murder, a client of hers had called, of Valerie's, had called to say that he remembers Valerie and Isabel having interacted at the church. And did she know who that woman was then? Like, did she know it was Valerie? But really, he is there because the client also gave them a name. Quote, the name of a woman who also used to attend the group but stopped coming after Mason's disappearance. A woman who is unable to have children. So Detective Daddy shows her a photo and asks if she recognizes it, and that her name is Abigail Fisher. Isabel remembers it as a name that was on the true crime con attendee list, because we know that she's like, that's her jam, right? suddenly it hits her like a ton of bricks, and she pulls up that True Crime Con article and finds a photo of fucking Abigail sitting in the front row with like those big teary eyes watching her speak.
Oof.
Isabel feels like finally, after all this time, they have a face, a name, and a chance.
Okay. They're setting the scene here. You're really thinking about who this is for. So there's a buzz, big, heavy metal doors opening, fluorescent light bulbs, and then a prison guard says, "Isabel Drake." She remembers to when Dozier, Detective Daddy, came over and was looking at her hand and then made the comment, "Valerie took a lot from you, and how does that make you feel?" She says, "How do you think?" Obviously. yes. She's like, he's like, "Well, we don't know yet. Like, we need more information from you," essentially. And she knows that at this point, he already knew what was going on. Mm-hmm. And that he's put it all together, and that Valerie had been listening to Abigail every week. And that Valerie thinks of Ben and all the lies that he spins about Isabel while she's like talking about how much she wants a child. Essentially, then he's just like, "Well, anyways, I'll keep you posted on any updates. I'll see you later. Bye." And this is the moment. This is the moment when Isabel knows that her plan would work. So she stands. This is back to like snap back to reality moment.
Oops, there goes gravity.
Exactly. She stands and walks toward the prison guard as she watches Ben be escorted into the visitor area. It's Ben who's in prison. Ooh. Okay. So then, first question is, how are you doing? Getting any sleep?
Ooh. Who asked that? Who asked that?
Ben asked her. Isabel asked that to Ben.
Ah, sucker.
Sucker. Of course, Ben is like, "Izzy, I didn't do this." Of course, Isabel knew what it looked like as soon as she looked down at Valerie's lifeless body, and that everything would come back to her, like the scorned mistress who's already fucking crazy, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's just like, "Look, they found your ring, Ben, and your DNA is everywhere. It's not looking good for you. Did you find out what she had done to Mason? And then you just couldn't help yourself, because I would have done the same thing. I wouldn't blame you." Of course, Ben is adamant on the fact that he didn't kill fucking Valerie. And then, of course, she just keeps laying it on. She just said, "One thing I can't figure out, though. How did Valerie know that the baby monitor was dead? It's almost like maybe someone mentioned it to her."
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody told her to show up.
Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
He obviously is just like, "I don't know what you're talking about." Then she moves on to Allison and asks him to tell her about. Exactly. She says, "Tell me about Allison and how did she die?" Ben says that he's never killed. No comment again. He's never killed anybody. So stop accusing me. But she knows, Isabel knows, that he uses words as a weapon. He's always controlling and planting ideas in people's heads. She's picturing Allison already distraught, knowing that he's out with another woman, pregnant, knowing that nothing's going to change, and that Ben had left pills on the counter like a dare, knowing that like she would probably take them. And I think I'm just going to read this like kind of verbatim because it is a good quote. "Ben has always known that you don't have to pull the trigger to get away with murder. Sometimes all you need to do is let load the gun and let it go off on its own.
Yikes.
So he just manipulates all these women into doing the bad, dirty work for him so that he can get away with living his own fucking life, fucking women that look like the same woman.
Who would you get to play Ben in a movie? He'd have to be, hot.
Yeah. What's that? The guy who played, that Christian Grey? We're from the fucking, those books.
50 Shades of Grey.
Shades of Grey. Yeah. Cause he he's tall, dark, handsome, and then got that weird side.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's okay. I don't know. I just feel like this manipulative guy needs to be really hot and
really. Oh, geez. I think kind of my typical definition of hot is weird, so
yeah, but you're like Keanu Reeves. Obviously it needs to be
obviously Reeves. No, because Keanu is precious.
A sweet daddy.
He's a sweet daddy.
I got an epi for us. Are you ready?
Yes. Tie it all up with a bow.
All right. So she can still hear Margaret's voice asking Isabel to tell her a story. She realizes that she had started spinning her own story at 8 years old, how she was dark and toxic, and how that really wasn't true because her family just doesn't fucking talk about it. Anyway, her and Waylon are finished telling the whole story now, how Ben was responsible for Allison's death, how Dozier had suspected Ben but never had the proof that he needed to convict him. She feels like Dozier knew what happened to Valerie, but that he also didn't really want to know. He just didn't want to go there. It was almost it was too much paperwork.
This feels like it's played out its course. It's everything's fine.
Yeah. So they discuss how Ben and Valerie had hatched a plan to live a child-free life together, and then Ben had killed Valerie to keep his secret safe. Casey agreed to an interview. Remember Casey from her old coworker, yep, who's a friend? And in her interview, she had remarked how quietly controlling Ben was and how much Isabel had changed after she got with him. So kind of like a character reference, adding credibility to her. Paul Hayes, neighbor boy, also comes by to explain something to Isabel, and what that is that the man that she saw at his house in the middle of the night is actually his daddy-o. But his dad is super sick, nearing the end. Obviously, he looks like a skeleton. That's how Isabel described him. But that they both have records, and that it is against Paul's parole to harbor another criminal. So he had to keep his father hidden. So that's what's going on here. So his
Paul
father
is a good guy.
I don't know, though. His father had told Paul what he had seen that night with Isabel. And the whole time, Paul himself had suspected that it was her that killed her baby, but that he couldn't turn her in without also turning himself in.
But Paul's just looking out for his dad.
Yeah, it's like the good of a bad, the goodest of the bads.
I think Paul is just a troubled criminal.
Yeah, he made some poor decisions and, harboring another person with a record. Fugitive. But, that's also selfish. You know, if he really thought that she did it,
I guess.
He could have just trying to take care of him. He saw her himself.
I guess, true.
I don't know. All right, so she's also working, she's also working on a relationship with her parents, even though everything has been so broken. At least everything is now out in the open, is what she says. The quote, "he's in a better place" comment, we get a full circle here, is how they had all ended everything. They were able to trace it, which I'm like, I don't know if you could do that, but I digress. They were able to trace it and find a nondescript little rental halfway across the country, and that's where Abigail was. And she had been told by Valerie that Isabel was an unfit mother, so she felt fine, and she had taken very good care of him. So then you're like, what's going on here? So Isabel goes to Mason's nursery and sees him smiling at her now and starts thinking about the years she will never get back, but a year of his life that he will probably never remember. So it's okay. She knows now that Abigail had seen Isabel in the news and went to see her speak to justify that she had her baby, because she really needed to believe, quote, that he was in a better place.
Oh, that comment coming back.
That fucking comment. So here's my burning question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Ben actually killed Allison?
I don't, like, I believe what Isabel thinks, that he is very manipulative and controlling and maybe didn't necessarily, like, you know, put it in her food or, like, make her take them. I think mm-hmm. that he laid the groundwork and he kept his hands clean in his own head, but really mm-hmm. he led the people to do what he wanted them to do.
But like, then why was Waylon so convinced that he killed her? Because he said Isabel would never, or Allison would never have done that pregnant.
Right. I did, like, when Isabel was thinking about what, like, imagine being pregnant, you're probably very emotional, yeah. knowing that your husband is always gone and doesn't actually want children, mm-hmm. knowing that he's probably with another woman. Him leaving the pills on the counter, like, that story, what seemed believable to me, like, right, right. that she's just, like, distraught, probably full of hormones, being like, I'm gonna be a single mom and this isn't how I'm picturing things. Maybe she did just, like,
right. And you know what, she was probably feeling, like, pretty worthless because, like you had said, she was going to be a lawyer and now suddenly she's just like nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. She just sits at home all day, has a lot of time to think, has a lot of time to just be sad about where her life is at. Now she has a baby with a man who doesn't want a child.
What do you think about Ben being in jail for something that he actually didn't do?
I kind of am like, maybe like the vindictive part of me is like, yeah, you deserve to be there. You're kind of fucking shit.
Karma is a Ben sitting in jail because he's bad boy.
He is a bad boy. He's a bad dad, just like her dad. Bad dad. Oh,
true. So her dad should also be in jail then too, though. Yeah, so there was so many twists. Ashley was right about Waylon having been Allison's brother. I personally would not have seen that one coming. I don't think it would have been, I would have been shocked if Ashley had not have said that.
True, yeah.
And then what were the other, oh, her having found out that her mother actually was the one who killed Margaret, that would be fucked. Loved how Mason ended back up with her at the end. I was curious about that.
True, because we were like, there's no way there's going to be a happy ending.
And there is, but like,
yeah.
So I guess it depends where you sit morally on mm-hmm. how you feel about Ben and being
true,
in jail.
True.
I like how the necklace, like the ring necklace thing, like came mm-hmm. back around. Although, don't you think her DNA would have been on it?
Well, I was just wondering, like, because I went back over that chapter, obviously, I was taking notes, but I'm like, there's no detail on how she actually, like, got his DNA all over, other than the fact that he's probably been there.
He's just been there, yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, she maybe, like, knew where she touched, so she was
I guess,
able to, like,
yeah, true, true.
Wipe
true.
Her DNA?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting. No, it was a good book. What do you give it?
Yeah. Oh, 4 stars for sure.
Yeah, four. That's a 4.
Maybe 4.5. I liked all the twisties and turns. And honestly, yes. I gotta say it, I thought Jillian was the queen of twists, but Stacy just nailed it.
Yes, it was just nailed like bang, it. Bang, bang, mm-hmm. bang, bang. Mm-hmm. Here you go. And also, Mason's still alive, and now you get your baby mm-hmm. back. So we were wrong last week when we thought it was not gonna end well. Turns out,
yeah,
she got her baby back.
Well, and like, and also, like, she doesn't have to be afraid of herself anymore.
True.
She was like afraid of herself for so
true.
Long, thinking she was a murderer and that she potentially killed her mm-hmm. own child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
And like, the entire time, we're like, the sleepwalking theory, it's just too, like,
true.
It would be like too, it's too simple or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was fucking Valerie. I liked how she had said that every single woman had, like, something going on in this book.
Mm-hmm. True.
Was very true. Yeah.
Yes. It confused me, the names. All the names of the women did confuse me, though. I'm like, which one? Okay, wait. Okay. Who's
At least
who?
They weren't all, like, crazy
true.
Names, though.
Like, apple bottom jeans, boot with the fur kind of thing. Like, imagine that was your name.
Apple bottom jeans.
Jean. Boot fur.
Yeah, what did you rate it? You rated it a 4.2?
I would say, like, a 4. Yeah, 4. Yeah.
Maybe 4.5. I don't know.
4.5. It was good. 4.5. Okay, well, like, next week we're not going to be here because we've got some things coming up.
Because we don't want to.
We don't want to be here. And there's some exciting things on the horizon. We'll say that, maybe. And then also, don't go vote because we will already have picked. We don't know the book for next week, so sorry about that. Just go look on FB or the IG.
It will either be Murder in the Family or Bright Young Women. So both great books. If you want to buy them both and then just read them anyway, that'd be great.
Exactly. They're both highly recommended.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
that
goodbye.
Was a ride. I'm happy we did that.
I'm off the roller coaster now. I need to go and find a book. Goodbye.
Oh,
okay,
wait.
Goodbye.
You need to go and find a book. What?
Now I need to go and find a book to, like, crush my soul even more. I'm going to go read Shark Heart.
Go read Shark Heart. It's so good.
Okay, well, don't see you next week. Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening. Please join us over at the Book Club Babes Facebook group for book discussions and to make your book recommendations, or on Instagram at bookclubbabes.pod.
If you'd like to reach out to us directly, you can email us at bookclubbabes.pod@gmail.com or contact us on our website at bookclubbabes.ca. If you love the Book Club Babes podcast, please tell a friend about us. And until next time,
bye!
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.